We are aware of its existence by our experience. Okay. This is a glove. You can see its size, you can see its shape, you can see its color. It's a material object, external object, with specific form, color. And so you can describe it. The cruder the object, the easier it is to describe. The subtler the object, the senses cannot perceive it. If I told you music, you cannot describe its color, you cannot describe anything else, except you can only describe the experience of music. The more abstract the thing is, the less is it perceived by the sensory organs. Now, even within music, if somebody played a symphony, and you'll say, yes, you know, this is Bach, this is Mozart, this can't be Beethoven, it has to be Mozart. Now, how do you know that? Can you explain that? Well, you can experience it. It's very hard to explain to somebody why this is a Mozart piece. Same way in Indian classical music, if somebody played something, I would say this is Rag Rageshri or this is Rag Kalavati. Somebody will say, well, it's music. They can't understand. How do you know it's Rag Rageshri? How do you know it's Rag Kalavati? Well, it's the same way with a painting. Look at certain painting, you can say, this is a painting from this era. So, subtler an entity, more difficult it is to describe in words, and senses cannot perceive it by normal means. Okay? So, architecture. Style of music. You have a particular style of singing. For example, in Indian classical music, there are certain families have developed a singing style or instrumental style. You know, they are playing the same raga, they may be playing the same composition, but in a different style. Now, these are same way with food. Suppose somebody cooked vegetable. They both may be a potato vegetable, but something has a different style. Maybe the same spices also, but how it is cooked creates a different flavor. So the subtler the entity, more difficult it is to describe because it is not perceived by the five sensory perceptions. But we experience it through higher perception, higher experiences can tell us that this is Rag Rageshri, this is Raga Savari. This is Raga Savari being sung in a Patiala style, a particular style of presentation of the music. In the same way, mind is something that you cannot put your finger on, but you can experience yourself with the mind. Mind is known by our experiences. Mind is best described by its function and its abstract nature. Now, mind also, there's a mind of the human being, there's a mind of the animal, there's a mind of the non-living entity, there's a different mind. So when you say, what is mind? Well, there are different minds. That these minds are different because they express themselves in a different way. So mind is only known by its experience that we receive from it. How is it like in an analogy of a computer? We described earlier that mind and a brain, they are closely related. Brain, we said, is a part of the body. It's a physical entity. And brain is the base from which mind operates. How is it like in a computer? Suppose you have a computer and there's a memory. There's a random access memory, RAM memory. There's a board of RAM. A whole bunch of RAM is on it. You can turn off the computer, you can open it and point out to somebody, you see, this is memory. These are memory chips. The program will reside in here. Okay. You can put your finger on the memory chip and say, this is a memory chip. In the same way, you can put your finger on the brain and say, this is a brain, identically. Now, when you turn on the computer and load a program into the memory, still you can say, this is memory. It's the same chip, same identical chip. But what has happened is there is a particular style. How the bits are organized in the RAM, we call that a program. Program is loaded in the memory. But if I asked you, show me the program, how will you show me a program? How do you know a program is in it? How do you know which program in it? You can't tell. You can open a computer. How do you know Microsoft Word is in the memory? How do you know? You cannot tell. Well, because when you look at it, it's ones and zeros, the patterns of ones and zero is all in the memory. Only reason you know is a Microsoft Word is because you took Microsoft Word disk and put it in the computer and installed it. That's why you know Microsoft Word is there. But you cannot tell by looking at the memory chip that there's a Microsoft Word program in it. Yet, what does the memory do? What does the computer do? Computer executes Microsoft Word. That's what it does. That's actually the whole power of the computer is in this invisible thing that is residing in the memory. And that's the thing that determines what the computer will do. So mind is that type of a force. You can say it's an energy, you can say in a force, however you want to describe it, it's a matter of description. But what the mind is, it's this resident energy, resident force within this I. We talked at length about what is I. So mind is that operating entity in this entire I, which is the prime dominating factor, which guides the journey either toward the cosmic consciousness or toward the material object.
So mind is the doer.
Mind is the doer of the, not only the doer, it's more than doer, right? Doer is one aspect of the mind. We call that ego mind or the ahamtattva mind. But to be able to do, there has to be chitta, there has to be mahatattva, and all those entity, and also it needs to receive the vibrational energy if the perception is from the outer world. Meditation is an inner world, and that's an inner perception. Mind is also involved in recreating that inner perception in its journey toward the consciousness. It's kind of a long answer to your question, but mind is this abstract entity, and mind means chitta, aham tattva, and mahatattva. These are the functional aspects of the mind. Mind perceives. What does mind do? Mind perceives. We can describe mind by what mind does. Virus. You know, we cannot see virus. What do the doctors do? They do all kinds of tests on you. And then they say, well, it must be virus because all the tests came out negative. But you are sick is a fact, so it's got to be the virus. When we don't know anything, we call it virus, right? So it's like that. We know something by its effect. We know something by its effect. You know, gravitation persists, and therefore we think that Earth must be there. When you study astronomy, what happens? You know, you look at a star and you see that the star is spinning like this. You know, large majority of the objects in the astronomy, they are, or large bit of the stars, they are what they call like a bipolar. They're two, they're a pair of stars. Large majority of the stars are in a pair. Our sun is one of those exceptional and fewer star, which is by itself lonesome. Now, when you look at study the astronomy, what happens is that they see the star is spinning like this. So they figure that there has to be a second star there. But that star may be dead, so you cannot see it. Star can only be visible when it is in this particular phase where it is actually going through this thermonuclear reaction. Then only you can see it, right? If the star has completed its thermonuclear reaction and has no more fuel left, then it's a dead star. And this dead star is just gigantic gravitational force, but there is no nuclear reaction going on. And so the other star keeps spinning like this. And therefore, the astronomers figure out that there has to be a second star there. How? They cannot see it. But they can look at the rotation, the speed, the amount of time and cycle and all of this. And based on that, they can pinpoint the size and the location of the second star. So many things in our world, we can only know not by knowing it, not by seeing it, but by its effect. And mind is also one of those entities that we know its presence by certain things, by certain effect, by certain experiences. And we can describe what it does. We know that mind does action. We know the mind has propensities. We know that the mind wants to express something. Mind has certain desires. And as the mind, higher the mind is, the greater the number of propensities it possesses. You are not satisfied by simply food and sleep, and you need something greater to stimulate your mind. You are a mind center entity. You are not here because of food, sleep, or, you know, basic fear. Those are not your driving reason to be here today. But if you look at animal, what are the driving propensities of the animal? Ahara nidra bhaya maithunam cha, the food, sleep, fear, and procreation. Animal mind lives for those purposes because it's a body-centered mind. Human mind is more elevated, and it is not a body-centered. Human mind is, you know, we are mind-centered. Mind is a dominating factor. That is why, as I said, that human being in Sanskrit is called manava or manushya, where the mind plays the dominating role. Driving force of why you are here is because your mind knows that your journey should be toward the consciousness. And that is why you are here today. You're not body-centered being, you're a mind-centered being. Anything else? So, you know, we say that I We say that the very essence of spiritual journey and the very essence of the driving force of spiritual evolution is this one point. What was that origin of what drove the spiritual evolution in human society
consciousness.
Or a million years ago? What was that single point?
Consciousness.
Consciousness was always present, right?
Yeah.
Consciousness
well,
is present even in here.
Yeah.
Awareness of the self existing. Awareness of the I.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. When that question arose in the mind as to who am I, where have I come from, what is my journey, what am I doing here, how did I come about, who am I? This question is the very root, very essence of beginning of spiritual evolution in human development. And to this day, you are here for the same purpose. Who am I? Okay. So remember that. And as I said, that as the journey, spiritual journey, unfolds, what happens? Mind develops greater and greater propensities. Mind is no longer satisfied by the satisfaction of the body. It needs higher propensity. The subtler the mind, the higher the number of propensities. You know, one who studies classical music does not like the everyday popular music. They are not doesn't satisfy, because propensity has advanced. Mind has become more complex, you know. So naturally, as a result of development and evolution of mind, number of propensities increases, keeps increasing and increasing. And they go toward higher and higher self. We'll be talking about that today also. Any other question from last time? From last couple of times? Okay, so we'll move forward. Now, the concept that I'll be introducing, they're all interrelated, you know, so it's sometimes difficult to talk about something, you know, without the background of the other, because they're all interconnected. And this is probably the hardest thing to teach, is when you start something out, when people don't have the background, and you have to teach things which are all interrelated to each other. So what I will suggest is be patient, learn as much as you can. And we'll be coming back to each one of these aspects into a full course, okay? So there are many concepts that we'll come back in maybe a week or 2 weeks later and talk about in depth. But so as we progress at this stage, I'll be just talking about it a little bit and introducing and just kind of give you the overview of it, not go deep into that. So if you feel a little bit uneasy, it's normal. Okay. Now, this universe is a mystical thing. It's a mystery. It's a mystical thing. And before the creation began, what was there? What was it before the creation? And how did the creation come about? And what is the purpose of the creation? And where the creation is going? These are the mysteries of universe. Who was there to create? How was it created? What was the purpose of creation? Where is the creation going next? Where is it going to end up? These are all the mysteries of our universe, mysteries of creation. We are somewhere in this journey of creation. We are moving forward. And we have been created in this journey, and we are looking back at it to understand the universe. Right? Understand how mystical this is? It's like Big Bang. Have you heard of the Big Bang theory, right? Big Bang X number of years ago happened, and the universe started expanding today. All the galaxies are still, they say, moving further and further away from, you know, from everything is moving away from everything else. So we are in a constantly expanding universe. And in the down the line, we came about after this Big Bang. Human being, we were created, finally came into this evolutionary plane. And now what are we doing? We are looking back in the history. And we are looking back. Who was before us? Who was before us? Who was before us? And we've discovered that we came from the line of single-cell organism amoebas. Well, what was before amoeba? Well, then we start going back and back and back. And then we say, well, you know, this universe, where, oh, there's a Big Bang. How do we know? Where was it? What was there before? So what do? We look at the universe. And we look at the objects that are going away from the Earth. And we look at these red and blue shifts. And based on these red and blue shifts, we can tell that universe is expanding at a certain rate. And further away the object is, the faster it's moving, almost in a linear fashion. And so then what the scientists do is to calculate it backward. Knowing what those objects are doing, they can calculate it backward in time and come to a point of when the whole universe was present as a one object. And that's when the Big Bang occurred. So what I'm saying is that scientists are doing the same thing, astronomers are doing the same thing as we are trying to do here. They are trying to find out what was Big Bang, when did it happen, how many years ago was it, what was the universe like then, and what was it before Big Bang? Because they are also trying to find out what the creation was like, and so are we. So, this is a mystery of the universe. So, what we say in Eastern philosophy is that failing to find proper term of description, we use the word God. We say cosmic consciousness because we can't describe it in any other way. We need something to express it, to explain. And so we say that before the creation began, God was there, cosmic consciousness was there. And cosmic consciousness created this universe. How? From what? Something has to be there in order to create it from, right? This glove was created from wool. So wool had to be here. And for wool, the sheep had to be there, right? So everything has a cause and effect. This universe is a cause and effect. To know the origin of the universe, you have to ask that question, what was the cause of that? 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 Then you come to the ultimate cause. And this ultimate cause is what we call cosmic consciousness or God. So we say that God created this universe, and God created it out of him, has to be out of himself, because there was nothing else there. There couldn't be anything else at that time, because God is a singular entity. If God is a singular entity, then before creation, there can be nothing except God. And if the universe is created, then God created the universe out of his own entitative existence. So this creation is briefly you can say is in two phases. One is a phase of the creation of the universe, and the second is the phase in which the created universe is merging back into its creator. So there are two cycles of this. In the first cycle, universe is being created. And in the second cycle, this created universe is returning back to its origin. So in Sanskrit, we say there are two cycles. The cycle of creation is called Sanchar. Sanchar is spelled S-A-N-C-H-A-R-A. Sanchar. Sanchar is a phase of creation. And then the second phase of creation, the returning phase, is called Prati-Sanchar. P-R-A-T-I and Sanchar. Returning phase. Now, as I said that, I will be talking about this at extreme detail when we talk about Sanchar and Prati-Sanchar. But for now, that's all I will say. So, in Sanchar, or the cycle of creation, there are certain forces operational. And I will just briefly say that this force is called Avidya Maya. Maya means, Maya is a, we use the word Maya when Maya actually in Sanskrit means illusion. Maya means illusion. This creation is an illusion. Illusion meaning this creation is within the mind of God. What God thinks, what he creates in his mind, appears as a reality to the outer world. So we say that this universe is a thought projection of the cosmic mind. Whatever cosmic mind thinks becomes a reality in the outer world. So this creation that we see, which are the air, the energy, the factors that ultimately created these different forms, the original factors, they were created in this cycle of creation called Sanchar. Sanchar flow, flow of Sanchar. So God created this universe in this one half, the half the cycle of what we call Sanchar, flow of creation. And God is the most subtle entity, and everything that was created was crude in comparison. I'll use the word subtle and crude, but they are a relative term. When something is more abstract, we say it is more subtle. And then in the returning phase, in the Pratisanchar flow, the whole universe is moving back towards the creation, to the creator. So the creator created the universe in his mind, and when he created, the universe appeared. And then universe is returning back. God is withdrawing the universe back to him. So as he withdraws the thought, the universe is then evolving accordingly. So we are all in this Pratisanchar, or this cycle of returning cycle. We are at a different point in this returning cycle. Returning cycle, back to the creator. Creator is withdrawing universe into himself. Now I know this is very highly theoretical subject, and I'm not very theoretical person. I'm a practical person. But at this point, if you just have faith in me, I'll just tell you this, that this theory also has its value. in practice. So as we'll study more of it, you will understand why. So bear with me if it seems highly theoretical. It is kind of highly theoretical. But anyway, so what happens in this returning cycle, there is a force called Vidyamaya. There is a force of attraction, cosmic attraction. So this force of cosmic attraction called Vidyamaya, spelled V-I-D-Y-A, Maya, M-A-Y-A, Vidyamaya. This is a force of universal force. It's a present everywhere. It's a force of attraction. This universe is built on the force of attraction. Everything attracts everything else. So, by the application of the force of Vidyamaya, the universe is constantly evolving and moving toward the Creator. And as it progresses on this path, this is where my today's class is really focused on. This Pratisanchara, or the returning cycle, as what happens is this force of Vidyamaya is like a magnet, kind of like a attracting force. It carries everything toward God, toward Parampurusha. And that is what we call evolution. Evolution of mind, evolution of body. Evolution of mind and body exists or is propelled by, it is driven by this universal, ever-present force of Vidyamaya. Constantly takes you forward. Now, not only you and me, but every animal, every plant, every creation, every living and every non-living object, all of them are moving along this returning cycle, Pratisanchara. And as it evolves, as it moves forward, what happens? There is a development of the mind, evolution of the mind occurs in the journey. And gradually what happens is that there is a greater and greater development of the reflection of the consciousness begins to emerge out of it. Okay. So you remember when we were talking about I, we talked about cognitive faculty, consciousness, spirit. I know I exist. This I entity that knows that I exist. This knowing I is the spirit or consciousness. That spirit is present, but it is not clear. It's not visible to the mind. In animal also, mind is there and spirit is there too. But mind, this spirit, reflection of the spirit is not evident to the animal mind. And therefore, animal mind remains body-centered. And it is driven by instinct. Whereas, by the application of the Vidyamaya, when the unit being reaches a particular stage where the reflection of the consciousness becomes clear, more dense, more visible, then it becomes witnessing force and begins to witness the mind. And at that moment, we say that free will begins to appear. Free will comes into the picture. Now you might say, well, the animal also has a free will. How do they have free will if they don't have clear reflection of consciousness? We're talking about a clear reflection of consciousness and how it develops. Yes, animal also has a free will. What is a free will? Tiger, by its free will, goes out hunting. By its free will, procreates, by its free will does this action. And you are also here by free will today to attend the class. But tiger's free will originated, was motivated by the primary instincts. It was instinctual. And therefore, it was driven by inner instincts. What happened in your case? Why are you here today? Did you ask that question to yourself? Why am I here? What drove me to come here today? You could have gone to the nightclub, or you could have been doing so many other things, right? Why are you here today? There's so many people in the world, but how few people would make the choice that you're making? Because as the clear reflection of consciousness begins to dominate in you, what happens? Your propensity increases. You begin to realize that no, there's something much more important, much greater, much more valuable is here. And so you make a free will to come here. This is a free will, not out of instinctual need. It's a free will, the choice you made, and it originated because of this clear reflection of consciousness. So, at human stage, this consciousness develops, and with it develops the free will. And with that develops the power of the law of karma. Law of karma begins to be effective, begins to take shape because of this clear reflection of consciousness that develops, and the mind now is functioning under the witnessship of the consciousness. Mind is also aware of the cognitive faculty. That cognitive faculty is witnessing my action. Animal doesn't have that. Even highly developed animal like dogs or chimpanzee, you know, at this point in evolution, they are not able to meditate. That reflection of consciousness has not become dense enough. Maybe in future, animals may evolve so that they may meditate or make this free choice of the free will. So, the journey begins, journey evolves, and law of karma, Lina, becomes effective. And this law of karma then becomes the dominating force in spiritual journey and accelerates your journey. At the same time, it can also become the cause of downfall. So if you look at the journey, the universal creation happened at a very rapid speed in the initial phase. Then it slowed down. And then returning journey was also at a slower speed. And when it reached that level of what we call human stage of the free will, then journey accelerates up too. So from human stage, the journey becomes very rapid. Spiritual journey becomes extremely rapid because free will is present. You are not only being moved forward by the force of Vidya Maya, but because of your free will also. So if you have, for example, it's like a boat that is moving in the river. River has certain current, and the boat moves with that also. Even if the motor is not running, the boat is going to go in the direction of the flow of the current. So animals are like that. They are just moving with the current. But when you turn on the motor, you're also being propelled by the current, plus the propulsion of the propeller, that moves your boat forward. And so human journey becomes a very rapid evolution of spiritual consciousness, development of spiritual consciousness. Because people sometimes ask me, why is it that, you know, human beings are subjected to the law of karma and, so to say, animals are not? It's because really animals don't have developed free will. So how can you really subject them? There's no such thing as evil tiger. There's no such thing as a bad lion. You know, lion is a lion. Just because lion goes out and hunts a deer or hunts the weak baby deer is not a bad tiger compared to another tiger which hunts male strong deer. Doesn't make one more of a criminal mind. Tiger is a tiger. Tiger is not judged. Tiger does not have no concept of sin, nor is it subjected to sanskara, or what we call impropriety, or in sometimes religious term, people say sin. There is no such thing as a sinful tiger. Tiger is not subjected to the law of karma for its action. Tiger always moves forward in the spiritual journey by the power of Vidyamaya. The boat always goes in the direction of the current of the river. But at human stage, when the free will is operational and human being does not make the proper choice, then the mind degenerates and then falls. If you may recall, last time I said that for you to exist, for an entity to exist, there has to be a vibrational match. There is a body that has a vibration. The mind residing in the body also has a vibration. These two for you to exist, these two vibrations have to be in harmony within certain range. When that harmony is lost, we call that death. When that synchronization is lost beyond certain frequency, we call that death. And mind separates from the body and is reborn into another body that would have this harmony in it. And that's what determines the reincarnation. How is a mind reborn into what frame of body? What body is reborn into? It's determined by the vibration of the mind when the death occurs. So, if you recall, I also said that the vibration of the mind is basically the sum total of the sanskaras of the past, whatever karma one has done, sum total of all those put together generates the vibration of the mind. And we are constantly transmitting these vibrations. Energy, we say that. Many times we say, you know, this person has that energy. This person has energy of attraction. This person, you know, you feel repelled by somebody. You feel attracted by somebody. Because each person is emitting certain vibration. When you're emitting similar vibration, then there is a kind of what you call acceptance of vibrations. And we like or dislike some subject based on that. So the law of karma is basically the topic of today that I've been talking. We haven't really gotten much into law itself, but you can see how the law of karma itself came into being first. And then how it would be subjected at a certain point of creation in returning phase of the creation, that it becomes effective. So now